We are here speaking today with Aaron Dixon. Aaron Dixon is a former founder of the Seattle chapter of the Black Panther Party in the late 1960s. He has been a lifelong community activist and organizer in Seattle who works on building progressive social movements and focuses on issues of social and economic justice. In 2002, he founded the Central House, a nonprofit providing transitional housing for youth of color in Seattle's Central District, and he recently attended the World Social Forum in Venezuela. He's here speaking us today about issues on our incarcerated youth.
Okay, my name is Aaron Dixon. I was a member of the Black Panther Party for 10 years, and I have worked over the last 30 years. I've worked with gang-involved youth and youth in general. Currently, I am running for U.S. Senate against Maria Cantwell.
You've worked with a lot of youth in the community. Can you tell us more specifically about your work with youth at the Central House?
Mm-hmm. Central House was an organization that I founded about 3 years ago, and along with another friend of mine, the late Guy Carosi. And we founded Central House because Guy and I both had been working with youth in various capacities. And we felt that the social services that were provided for youth was not holistic enough. There were too many areas that you know youth could fall through in terms of things that were available to them. So we wanted to create something more connected and more holistic. Because a lot of the youth that we worked with, and you know, just in general, you know, a counselor or a case manager works with the youth from 8 o'clock to 5 o'clock, or from 9 o'clock to 5 o'clock, and he goes home, or he or she goes home, and those youth either go home or they hang out on the streets, or they get involved in whatever it is that they're going to get involved in. Also, one of the issues that we saw was that youth are often aged out of services. When youth turn 18 years old, they no longer qualify for counseling or case management. They may have graduated from high school, but it doesn't mean that they are prepared to go out into the world and be successful and do the things that they need to do. So we started a transitional housing program for youth of color so that for homeless youth would have a place to come to, have a place that they can call home, have a place where they could develop themselves and prepare themselves for adulthood. Also part of the what we started at Central House, besides the besides the transitional housing program, was our youth leadership project. Our youth leadership project is focused upon giving young people the skills and the qualities that they need to be successful and teaching them how they have the ability to control their lives, how they have the ability to take control and take power of their life in this situation into their own hands. And the first thing is we teach them is that they have to, first of all, be responsible for their actions. They have to be responsible for everything that happens in their life, because only then can they have power over their lives. And you know, as naturally, it's very natural for someone to blame something or blame someone or blame another entity for a situation or a problem or a circumstance that they may find themselves in. When I was growing up, actually when I was in the Black Panther Party, some of the older people that I worked under, they used to tell me, Aaron, an excuse is like an asshole. Everybody has one. It took me a while to figure out and understand what they meant. Because it seemed like then I was making an excuse for everything. Every time I messed up, I made an excuse. And really, it's very empowering when you do make an excuse, because when you make an excuse, you're automatically taking away your ability to correct something, to correct a situation. But if you say, okay, I am responsible for this, I take responsibility for this, if you can make that statement, then you're putting the power back into your hands. Then you can go back and correct it, and you can align yourself so that you don't make that same situation over again. And it's much more harder and much more difficult to say that I take responsibility for this, or I created this problem, or I it's my fault. It's very difficult to do that, but what it does is creates a tension within yourself, and that tension builds up to a point where you it forces you to where you don't want to feel that tension again. And so by you not wanting to feel that tension again, then you tell yourself then you are going to not make that mistake again, and you're going to do whatever it is that you have to do so that you can have more control over your life and that you can make better decisions. So these are the types of things that we teach young people at Central House. We also teach them that it's what you think is what you create. And and I learned this in the Black Panther Party, is that powerful, that positive thinking. Because nothing comes before thought. Thought comes first. And if you think something, then it will become true. If you think that you are bad, if you think that you are negative, if you think that you don't have any future in your life, then that's what you're going to create for yourself. But if you think that you have the power to change something, if you think that you're smart, if you think that you're intelligent, if you think that you can accomplish things, then just by you thinking those things, then eventually you will be able to be successful in those things. So I think it's really very important for young people to understand that. There's a statement that we give them, and that statement is, it's not what happens, but it's how you respond to the things that happen. Because all of us have things that happen to us. You know, there's constantly, from the time that we come on this earth, we have a lot of different things that happen to us. Now, we can come into this world with one mother, or we can come in this world with two, with a mother and a father, or we can come into this world with a drug addicted father, or we can come into this world with a father who's on drugs, or we can come into this world with one hand, we can come into this world with no legs. And here again, it's not what happens to you, but it's how you respond to the things that happen. Because as long as you have a mind, you can overcome anything. And that's the important thing that young people have to understand, that you have the ability to overcome any obstacle that's in front of you. It's just a matter of whether you believe that or not. And unfortunately, what happens is when we're young, depending on where our family comes from, depending on what experiences our parents have come from or gone through, they bring those experiences into their childhood and into their relationships. And so if our parents have had some negative experiences or a lot of negative experiences, then those experiences are brought into their child raising. And so those things are put onto their kids. And in a very short period of time, those kids pick those things up, because children are like sponges. Their minds are like sponges. They pick up everything. When I was coming up, you know, it used to be thought that kids or babies did not understand the things that they saw around them, or could not understand the things that they heard or the things that they saw. But now research has shown that babies at a very young age can really are affected by the things that they see. They're affected by the things that they hear. They are affected by the things that happen to them. And so these things go on to shape what they think about themselves. So so it's learning how to understand that and understand those things that that learning how to understand that it's not what happens to you, but it's how you respond, and learning how to respond in the right way so that you can solve your problems. Because life is really just about problem solving, learning how to solve your problems. The other thing that we teach young people is how to develop their concentration, develop their powers of concentration, because if you don't have the ability to concentrate on something, then you can't make something come true. You can't put a thought in your head and make that thought come true. In order to put a thought in your head or have a goal, you have to concentrate on that goal. You have to keep that goal at the front of your mind at all times. And no matter what happens, you have to keep your focus on that goal. And that's what we learned in the Black Panther Party. Our goal was to create a better life, a better world for everybody in this world, and to create programs and to deal with a lot of different issues. And we focused on those things no matter what happened to us, no matter whether we got arrested or whether somebody was killed or whether our office was closed down. We kept focused on what our goal and what our objective is. And as long as you can do that, you can make those goals and objectives into reality.
So right now in America, there are over 2 million incarcerated people, and an ever-growing percentage of that is our youth. So I'm wondering, I have a two-part question. The first part is, what are things we can do now to help keep our children out of jail? And once our kids do get out, what can we do to support them, and what resources are available or should be available in our community to help them get where they need to be?
Well, I think, first of all, our families and our communities are not what they used to be 30 years ago. And so we have to work towards strengthening our families and our community. If you're a parent, or if you're going to be a parent, you have to look at your past and look at the things that you've gone through and understand that you have to go through a whole healing process yourself. Just recently, there's been a book that has come out. It's called The Effects of Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome. And what this professor, Dr. Joy, is talking about is that the effects of slavery have followed us all the way up to the present day. That the traumatic circumstances and situations that slaves went through has been passed down from generation to generation to generation. And we have not had an opportunity to go through a healing process. So I think not just African Americans who have gone through slavery, but Native Americans who went through extremely terrible times, immigrants who came from Ireland, who came from Poland, who came from maybe traumatic situations in those countries. Those things have been handed down to them and have been surfaced in present day. So we have to really begin a healing process in our society, in our communities, in our culture. And for young people who are challenged with the many different obstacles and the many different things that are constantly thrown your way, you have to ask yourself several questions. First of all, you got to ask yourself, Where do you see yourself in 10 years? You know, what do you see yourself doing? And you have to really sit down and think about that. Do you see yourself in prison? Or do you see yourself living a good, successful life? And what type of life do you want for your kids? That's the other question you have to ask yourself. And most of us want to have kids and want to have families. And you have to ask yourself, what type of situation do you want to have for your kids? And one of the things that I have seen is a lot of the kids that I've worked with, I've watched them grow up and get married and raise families. And I would say there are quite a few of them who have decided that they were not going to have the type of childhood that they had when they were growing up, that they were going to be there for their kids. And that has really been very positive to see that a lot of young kids who have went through traumatic situations have decided for themselves that they were going to be better parents than what their parents were. So then we have to really start looking at our culture and our society. I think that we need to have a cultural revolution in this country, because the values that our society propagates are not the values that we need to have a loving, constructive society and culture. Because the values that we are put in front of us are individualism and materialism. And that's something that is pushed constantly, is individualism. Individualism is important because, everybody has their own individual attributes. But we are all human beings. We all come from one human family. And we have to understand that if one person in our community is suffering, then it affects everybody in our community. So that we have to create institutions that provide for everyone. We have to create institutions that provide all of the necessities that everybody needs to have. Right now, only kids that come from wealthy families or well-to-do families are guaranteed to have a very high-level education. If you come from a poor family or just a lower middle-class family, you are not guaranteed to get a higher education. That is wrong. We need to change that. Everybody, every child has the right to have a high degree of education. Every child should have free medical care. Everybody should have medical care, not just the wealthy, but everybody should have medical care. Everybody should have access to legal representation. Not just if you're a wealthy person, should you just have access? Because a lot of people are incarcerated because they did not have the proper legal representation. So there's a lot of unevenness that we have to make even in this society, and we all have to realize that we all have a role to play in that. That we all have to be social and political activists, because it's about creating a better world for everybody.
As someone who has been previously incarcerated and knows all that entails, the unevenness, like you just said, approaching the system, what it's like to be in the system, and then what it's like to get out of the system, what would you like to say to our youth that are incarcerated now?
Well, when you get the jacket of a felon put on you, it affects your self-esteem and affects how you look at yourself, and it's a stigma that's placed upon you by society as well. It makes it difficult for you to get a job. It makes it difficult for you to feel good about yourself. But I've seen a lot of young people who have been to prison, who were able to turn their lives around. And it's just a matter of learning to think positive about yourself and learning how to rely on yourself and learning that that it's not what other people think. What other people think about you really is not important whatsoever. The only thing that's important is what you think about yourself. And if you are the type of person that is not interested in harming anyone spiritually or psychologically or physically, that's the only thing that matters. That's the only thing that matters. And as long as you are not doing any of those things, it doesn't matter what other people think about you. It only matters what you think about yourself. And you have to learn to think good about yourself and learn to think positive about yourself. And you also have to learn how to turn a negative into a positive, because actually there's a lot of things that you can learn when you're incarcerated. You have a lot of time to spend by yourself. You have a lot of meditative time, as I like to call it. You have a lot of time to learn more about yourself. And those are times when you have opportunities to do that, to when you're isolated, you know, learn more about yourself and develop a relationship with yourself. And once you develop a relationship with yourself, you develop an inner relationship with yourself. When you develop an inner relationship with yourself, you develop an inner connection to the universe, which many people may call God. And once you develop that inner relationship with yourself, then you have an entity that will always be there with you, that will always be there for you, that will always tell you the answers to things that you may not have the answers to. So, you know, it's about learning how to turn a negative into a positive, because behind every dark cloud is a silver lining. If you can understand that and if you can take that, then, you know, being incarcerated is just something that you overcome and you turn that into something positive. And many people have done that. And the only reason why someone can't do that is in their mind, because they will not allow their mind to think that.
So as a community leader and a future politician, how do you see yourself helping our youth, especially our high-risk youth?
Well, one of the first things that I would address if I became senator is the laws that were passed in the 1980s that took away the sentence guidelines and took away the ability for judges to hand out sentences based upon each individual case, which has caused our prison population to be skyrocket to 2 million people. I would also work to get rid of the three strikes laws that have happened all over the country. I would also work towards creating true rehabilitation. You know, there's many countries in the world that have prisons that are inside of the communities. And they also allow their families to come in and live with them. They allow their kids to come in and live with them. They allow their wives to come in and live with them. It is totally inhumane for us in this country to build prisons that are hours and hours away from the cities and from the families and from the communities, that do not allow any kind of contact, physical contact or a social contact for young people or their loved ones to have contact with their people that are incarcerated. It's inhumane. And I will work to create true rehabilitation in this country, so that when people are locked up for whatever reason, that they learn about themselves, they learn how to overcome their obstacles, and that they are prepared to come out into the world and be better productive citizens.
Thank you very much.
So, yeah, it's you were born in Chicago. Mm-hmm. You grew up in South Central Seattle. And so, I mean, we're, as I understand it, instrumental in founding the Black Student Union at the University of Washington and SNCC, as well as captain of the first Black Panther Party of Seattle. And so you've been active of the in the community for the past 40 years. What makes you want to run for Senate against Maria Cantwell, which is the critique coming from the Democrats? What urged you to run now?
Well, I really... It's something that I had never really thought about, and I must have fell and bumped my head or something to make this decision. No, I'm only kidding. But I was approached by the Green Party about running, and it had a lot to do with the timing, because I think that the time that we're in now is it's time for us to start developing some alternative political parties and running progressive candidates for office. And it's something that's playing out not only across the world, but it's also playing out all across this country, where average American citizens are so fed up with the current political system and the current crop of politicians that we have and have had over the last 50 years, that people want something different. They want some alternatives. And so having spent time in Brazil and having being kept up on the political events that have been happening in South America and other parts of the world, it was just something that I felt that I had to do. And that, you know, it's time for us to start moving in that direction of creating some alternative parties and putting progressive candidates in office. Because if we don't do anything, then we're just, things are just going to continue the same. Things are just going to get worse. And I think people are getting to the point, just as they did 30 years ago, is that we've had enough. You know, we've had enough, and we want some changes. So that's those are all the things that brought me to the decision to run.
Yeah, and speaking of people just getting fed up and of having enough, we saw a lot of this after the government's complete failure to respond to Hurricane Katrina. Excuse me. And on your website, aarondixon.org, you talk a lot about economic racism and classism. And so, how do you see racism and classism? Complementing one another in this in America.
Well, we used to say that capitalism breeds racism, and I think that is very true. Because in order for capitalism and imperialism to exist, you have to have racism. You have to have an oppression of one segment of the population in order for the upper segment of the population to increase their net worth and increase their income. So they go hand in hand. And I mean, you just take a look at what's happened since Reconstruction. You know, there was a time when black businesses and black farmers were very prosperous and were really doing very well in this country, and that was during segregation. But because of the way that capitalism operates and the way that racism complements capitalism, is those gains that African Americans made in the business community and the farming community have been taken away, have been eroded, and it just spreads out to the rest of the population. We have a very inhumane system that operates under capitalism. It's inhumane to older people. It's inhumane to young kids. It's inhumane to poor people. It's inhumane to the average citizen. And it's time for that we demand a more humane system or a more humane society.
what steps, can we as citizens and as activists go and take to demand a more just society?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that we can do. I think, first of all, we have to start with ourselves, and we have to start working on our own feelings towards other people and work on the things that keep us separate, because that's one of the things that capitalism does, is it keeps people separate. It keeps different racial communities, different economic communities against each other. They pit one against the other, and it becomes very divisive, and it makes it very difficult to make any real change. And so we have to question ourselves. And I think that ideologies and religions are our two biggest enemies, because if you hold on to an ideology, then you're not open up. You're not open to anyone else's thinking. If you are extremely religious person and you are very fervent about your religion, then that is not going to allow you to look at someone else who may not hold those same religious beliefs as your brother or your sister. So we have to start, you know, first of all, individually looking at those barriers and then work towards coming together, work towards you know, developing relationships with our neighbors and talking to people who may not hold our same political beliefs. A person doesn't have to be a leftist in order for a leftist to work with that person. You know, they just have to be a human being. So those are the types of things that we have to start working on and breaking down to create real change, because change is not going to come until the masses of the people come together and demand change. And here at this country, we're very far away from that compared to many other countries, say Bolivia or Argentina, where they've already had tremendous economic collapses and they've already undergone a lot of tremendous oppression. And we haven't undergone those types of things here. It's, you know, and we live in a very illusionary society. You know, everything is really an illusion for us. You know, we have all this material being. They've made it possible for even poor people to have the trappings than the same things that the wealthy has. You know, you can go to Rent-A-Center. You know, poor people on welfare can go to Rent-A-Center and get almost the same type of stuff that the wealthy can get. And so they have this illusion that they have what they need. They got a big screen TV. They can get credit and get a nice car. And even though they may be living in poverty, they still have this illusion that they have these things. And so once those illusions are taken away, then we can see the similarities that we have. So, you know, we just really have to start on the lowest level. And as conditions continue, as events continue, you know, those events will help to move things along, you know. And it's, you know, it's a worldwide movement. It's a national thing that has to continuously move, you know. So we just have to be ready. We have to have ourselves ready and be prepared, so when things start changing, that we are prepared to add something to those changes.
We here in the South Sound are at the tip, on the very tip of southwestern Washington's hunger belt. It's in Seattle. Your Central House is a nonprofit organization that goes and works with the homeless. What do you feel causes homelessness in this country, the wealthiest country in the world?
Well, we have an uneven system. We have a system that perpetuates that, and it also boils down to the type of a culture that we have. We have an inhumane culture, and that's the type of culture that doesn't have any boundaries. Nothing is sacred to this culture. You know, in traditional ancient cultures, there are certain things that never change. You know, you always respect your elders. You always uphold the children. You don't overproduce on the land. You don't cut down all the trees. You know, there's certain things that are sacred in ancient cultures. In Western culture, there's nothing that is sacred. This is the culture that moves like a locomotive, and it just moves towards this thing of accumulation of wealth and accumulation of profit, and whatever stands in its way gets run over, you know. But it can only go so far, you know. It can only go so far, and eventually it's going to catch up with itself. And so, you know, we were just talking about, you know, the economic downfall of this country, and it's eventually going to happen. And so, you know, I think those are the things that perpetuate not just homelessness, but hunger and poverty and racism and everything else. It's the type of culture that we have, and we have to have a cultural revolution in this country.
Thinking about ways to begin this cultural revolution, I'm one of the big problems seems to be the media and the media's whole of information, you know, and spin of things. I mean, I'm not just I'm printing things about you having unpaid parking tickets, you know, but printing things about I'm the benefits of free trade. I'm terrorism in Palestine, you know. How can people start mobilizing and start building? I mean, like I'm start taking back the media.
Yeah. We've got to reclaim the media. We've got to create our own media. And what you're doing is part of that. You know, you're developing, whoever you're working with, you guys are creating your own media. And that's what we have to do. That was one of the things that the Black Panther Party did very well, is that we had our own newspaper. And we understood the importance of having our own newspaper so that we can get out our voice. We said our newspaper was the voice of the people. And every Black Panther Party member had to sell 100 papers a day. You know, at one point we had a circulation of 350,000 newspapers per week all over the world. And we have to understand the importance of developing our own media, even if it's starting on the grassroots level. And what's been happening lately is that the conservative media has not only consolidated its power over the media, but they've also been buying out a lot of progressive media sources throughout the country. The Village Voice in New York was taken over by conservative paper. The Seattle Weekly has been taken over by conservative paper. There's been a big push to take over PBS by the conservative element. So they understand the importance of media. And we have to begin to understand the importance of media. We got to start not only creating our own media, but taking back the media that we've lost.
One last question before you have to go. I mean, I'm in this talk about I'm reclaiming the media, you know, like fighting social inequality, you know, and really, building a new society. Who do you see, or what segment of society do you see really that needs to lead the charge in building that new society?
Well, I think it's going to be up to everybody, but probably the most disenfranchised elements are going to play a very important role, but I think it's up to everybody. I think it's up to all elements of society to come together. I don't think that it's going to be led by any one particular segment, but it's going to be a coming together of all segments, coming together as one voice. And I just wanted to add that, you know, I remember during the times of the Black Panther Party, there were a lot of alternative newspapers. You know, there was, you know, I remember the Berkeley Barb, and I remember the, I can't remember that paper that was out of Seattle, but there were a lot of different types of alternative media papers, and we got to create newsletters. We put out a newsletter once a month. Start out with the newsletter. So, but I think it's going to have to be a coming together of all segments, not just one segment, but all segments. And I think the African American community has been under such tremendous siege over the last 30 years, and there's been such a breakdown of our communities and our families. Of course, there's a lot of very important voices that are coming out of the African American community, but I think it's going to have to come from all segments.
Thank you very much, Brad.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.